Good morning. So a little bit of a small group this morning. It must be the holidays or the weather or something. The full moon occurs today. And the solstice occurred, the winter solstice occurred yesterday. And that's what is giving rise to my talk today. Basically the solstice, as most of you know from grade school or junior high school, occurs as the Earth goes around the Sun. The axis of the Earth is a little bit tilted. And so if it's tilted like that, as it goes around, at some point, the north tip of our globe is pointed away, or is pointed further away from the sun than at any other time. And then we continue our annual journey, and at some point it's the equinox. And then when we get over to this side, the North Pole is pointed closest, or pointed, directed as close as it is to the sun. And that then is the summer solstice, when the days are longer. And the solstice is that one point, that one millisecond, that one micro millisecond, that point is pointed the furthest away from the sun. That's at least how we understand it today. Some of you have heard this before, but I'll say it again because I think it emphasizes the point. It's a baseball metaphor. And baseball is a smaller globe than the Earth. You know, it's about, I don't know how big a baseball is. Maybe 2 inches, 3 inches. Leather, cork, string, and wrapped together pretty tightly. And when a pitcher throws, and let's say we're in the big leagues and people throw really fast, when a pitcher throws a ball, it's traveling 90 miles or 100 miles per hour. And it's coming in at 100 miles an hour, and I think the mound is about 60 feet from home plate. And then you got another person there with a stick, maybe 3 feet long. And if that batter's eye and hand coordination is really good, they'll swing, and that little ball, that little globe, will hit this wooden stick and go in a nanosecond from 100 miles an hour in the other direction. I don't know how many hours, miles an hour, 40, 50. What happens there? I mean, what is that second? I can only imagine that ball getting squished flat and then bouncing back. But how long does it take for that to happen, for that little globe to go from 100 miles an hour in one direction to 40 or 50 miles an hour in the other direction? Now, the Earth is going about 18 and a half miles per second, or 67,000 miles per hour. And it hits a point in the same kind of nanosecond that baseball hit the bat in, and returns effortlessly. Although it's traveling at 60 to 70,000 miles an hour. I did my math. That's about 29 quadrillion miles per year. that's those kinds of moments condensed in a baseball game to the solar system. Those kind of moments are the realms in about which Buddhism is concerned. Those moments. In solstice is one moment, and it's a moment of changing direction and shifting. It happens every year two times. When I was looking, when I was preparing for this talk, I found many Zen teachers give talks on the winter solstice. Dogen did, and I will use one of his, and he refers to one of his Dharma uncles, a guy by the name of Hongzhi, who gave winter solstice talks. And then I began leafing through the books, and lo and behold, many Zen teachers give talks on the winter solstice. For some reason, they don't give them on the summer solstice. I'm not quite sure why, but they give them on the winter solstice. And that's unique to Zen, or Chan. Chan being Chinese, what evolved into Japanese Zen. Chan is the, I'll use those terms interchangeably. But you don't find talk about, the natural world in general is talked about a lot in Zen. Mountains, rivers, grass tips, weeds, sun, moon, solstice. You don't find those images, those metaphors used anywhere to the extent that they are in Zen in Tibetan Buddhism or in classical Buddhism of India or the Buddhism Theravadan Buddhism of Southeast Asia. Zen uses those images and to a much greater extent, those naturalistic images. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that before I delve into Dogen's winter solstice talk. I think the reason that Zen uses images like the solstice and like moons and suns and rivers and mountains is because of the Chinese culture, the ancient Chinese culture that Buddhism met when it came to China. A culture that it was highly evolved, that had a religion and culture and philosophy that was rooted in the natural world. The I Ching, which is an ancient Chinese text, uses the images of the images, naturalistic images, a lot. And in fact, the solstice is. The idea of return is found in the I Ching in yin and yang. And yin being the receptive, dark characteristic, and yang being the active and vibrant and light-filled element. Yin and yang is what the I Ching is about. And it's basically hexagrams. Is everybody familiar with the I Ching? It's a book that basically has hexagrams, which are three lines, and the lines are either full or broken in half. The full lines are yang. The broken lines are yin. And there are three lines, and then the hexagram includes three lines below that. So you have three lines above three lines, and the only variation is whether or not the top, middle, or bottom line is broken or whole. So there are 64 of them, just by doing the math again, and each hexagram has been commented on and has a story with it. And the hexagram that is related to the solstice is called return. It is the top three lines are yin, they're broken, and the bottom three lines, the first two are yin, and the bottom one is yang. So what it represents is the return of yang energy. The winter solstice is when yang appears again. The title of that, it's the 24th hexagram, is a return of consciousness of reality, activity obeying the mind. Return of consciousness of reality, activity obeying the mind. So yin and yang, when Buddhism came to China, there is this centuries of a cultural, philosophical, world perspective that is based in yin and yang and the natural world. And also, China at the time, there's the Taoist religion, again, rooted in the naturalistic world. Also using these concepts of yin and yang, dark and light. So that's why I think that's why I think Zen and Chan have as their metaphors, much more than other forms of Buddhism, the natural world. And we will see that in these Dharma Hall discourses on the winter solstice. Dogen, Ehe Dogen is the founder of the Soto School of Zen, the Japanese school of which this center is. We're in the lineage of Dogen, and he lived in the 13th century. And this is a collection of some of his Dharma talks. And this spans, I think, about maybe 20 years, 25 years. In that time, he did five talks on the winter solstice. And I'm gonna read one and talk about it. I can find it. this in three of the five talks on the winter solstice that Dogen gave, he recited a winter solstice Dharma talk given about 100 years previously by Hongzhi. He starts off with Hongzhi's winter solstice discourse, and then he comments on it. So I'm going to read one of those. And Hongzhi basically had a two-part Dharma talk. This was given in 1245. When the ancient Buddha Hongzhi, Hongzhi is lived about 100 years before Dogen in China. When the ancient Buddha Hongzhi was residing at Mount Tiantong during a winter solstice Dharma Hall discourse, he said, "Yin reaches its fullness and Yang arises." So again, it's these images of Yin and Yang, which are part of the Taoist influence. "Yin reaches its fullness and Yang arises. Strength is exhausted and our state changes. A green dragon runs fleetly when his bones are exposed. A black panther is transformed when he is clothed in mist. Take the skulls of the Buddhas of the three times and thread them into a single rosary. Do not speak of bright and dark heads, as truly they are sun face, moon face. Even if your measuring cup is full and the balance scale is level, in transactions I set a high price and buy when cheap. Zen worthies, do you understand? In a bowl, the bright pearl rolls on its own without prodding." That's the first part. The second part, he tells a Zen story. "Here's a story," Hongzhi continued. "Zhui Feng asked a monk, 'Where are you going?' The monk said, 'I'm going to do community work.' Zhui Feng said, 'Go.' Yun Men said, 'Zhui Feng understands people according to their words.' Hongzhi said about this dialogue, 'Don't move. If you move, I'll give you 30 blows.' Why is this so? For a luminous jewel without flaw, if you carve a pattern, its virtue is lost." Now, that's a lot of Zen stuff. Let's just take the last two lines of each of those pieces. After he goes through this whole litany of yin reaches its fullness and yang arises, strength is exhausted and our state of changes, what he does then is he bang, bang, bangs, throws out Zen images that depict yin and yang. So each of the images that he throws at us or after that opening statement are basically examples of yin and yang. A black panther is transformed when clothed in mist. Black, white. At what point does that panther disappear in the whiteness of the mist? But then he ends with, "Zen worthies, do you understand? In a bowl, the bright pearl rolls on its own without prodding." So that's his summary of that section. The next section is a very familiar Zen koan. But he ends it with, he asks the question, "Why is this so? For a luminous jewel without flaw, if you carve a pattern, its virtue is lost. In a bowl, the bright pearl rolls on its own without prodding. For a luminous jewel without flaw, if you carve a pattern, its virtue is lost." So I think what he's saying in both of these is that in yin and yang, in these polarities, in the give and take, in the lengthening of days and the shortening of days, in the marketplace, where in transactions I sell a high price and buy, everywhere, everything is as it should be. Everything is as it should be. Everything is nirvana. Everything is empty. Everything is enlightenment. There's no need. There's no need to go anywhere or do anything. even in this yin and yang, even in these polarities and this great returning, and although he didn't know that the world was traveling at 24 quadrillion miles an hour, even in that return and that those changes, everything is okay. Everything is functioning as it should. I'm tempted to go through all of these images, but I won't. Because I want to get to Dogen. So, Dogen has given, basically recited, a Dharma Hall discourse for the winter solstice from Hongzhi. And now Dogen weighs in. The teacher Dogen said, "Although these three venerable ones spoke this way, I, old man Daibutsu," which is how he referred to himself, "do not agree." And Dogen is kind of like this. And oftentimes, Zen teachers will contradict an ancient teacher. They'll recite something that the ancient teacher said and they'll contradict it. And Dogen is great sometimes saying, "Well, I think he got it 80%. Let me take a try." And Dogen will take a run at it, and maybe Dogen gets 80%. So maybe now combined they have 90%. But there's this idea in, or this common way of interacting with Zen teachers taking the Buddha's words or an ancient teacher's words and coming at it at a different angle. Not negating what that ancient teacher said, but coming at it at a different... Because words, no words are going to get it. And no ancient teacher's words are going to get it. "So although these venerable ones spoke this way, I, old man Daibutsu, do not agree. Great assembly, listen carefully and consider this well. For a luminous jewel without flaw, if polished, its glow increases." So what Dogen has just taken is the last line of Hongzhi, which said, "For a luminous jewel without flaw, if you carve a pattern, its virtue is lost." So Hongzhi is saying the world is right. It's okay. And Dogen is saying, "For a luminous jewel without flaw, if polished, its glow increases." So what's going on here, I think, is that Hongzhi is emphasizing realization and enlightenment in the polarity, and Dogen is emphasizing practice. Practice realization. Hongzhi is emphasizing emptiness. Dogen is emphasizing form. Both the same. They're both the same. I mean, emptiness cannot manifest, nirvana can't manifest except through form, and emptiness can't exist without form, and form cannot exist without empty. I mean, they're one and the same. And I think what Dogen is doing is he's emphasizing the practice element of practice realization. And then he goes on. "Today's first arising of yang and the daylight's increase is an auspicious occasion. A noble person reaches maturity." I'll back off a bit here. And part of the reason I think that we aren't plugged in to the moon. We aren't plugged in to solstice the way I think Dogen was. I mean, he's living on the northern part of Japan in a deep winter at a time when you didn't just flip the switch to turn the lights on, or the heat didn't come on automatically, and when you're cooking you didn't just turn the knob and the flame came. This was a time where the natural world had much more immediate relevance. So, "Today's first arising of yang and the daylight's increase is an auspicious occasion. A noble person reaches maturity. Although this is an auspicious occasion for lay people, it is truly a delight and support for Buddha ancestors. Yesterday the short length of day departed, yin reached its fullness, and the sound of cold wind ceased. This morning the growing length of day arrived, and yang arises with boisterous clamor. Now patch-robed monks feel happy and sustained, and the Buddha ancestors dance with joy. How could directly transcending, going back before the realms of awesome sound king of emptiness, have anything to do with the seasons of spring and autumn? Read that last sentence again. How could directly transcending, going back before the realm of awesome sound king of emptiness, have anything to do with the seasons of spring, autumn, winter, or summer? First part of the paragraph, he's basically saying, jump for joy. This is an auspicious, I mean, the Buddhas are you know, playing songs and marching in parades. The monks feel happy and sustained. Everybody's dancing for joy. The days are getting longer. This is a good time. It's auspicious. It's a great day. It's marvelous. That's the first part. And then he ends with, but how could directly transcending the realm of awesome sound king of emptiness have anything to do with the seasons of spring, autumn, winter, summer? He's back to enlightenment and the daily world. I mean, you know, the seasons, the passing of the seasons. How does that have anything to do with emptiness, enlightenment, nirvana? What's the connection there, is the question he's asking. Although to see in this way, that is, transcending the phenomenal world, is the life vein of wise people and sages, and the liver and kidneys and essential organs of humans and heavenly beings, it is not yet the nostrils of Shakyamuni and the eyeballs of Mahakashyapa. Do you people want to understand the occasion of this auspicious morning? Let me read that again. Although to see in this way, that is, transcending the phenomenal world, is the life vein of wise people and sages, and the liver and kidneys, essential organs of humans and heavenly beings, it is not yet the nostrils of Shakyamuni and the eyeballs of Mahakashyapa. Do you people want to understand the occasion of this auspicious morning? Part of what the Zens and Chans coming out being kind of a combination of Buddhism and Taoism. Part of it is the earthy metaphors. Talking about kidneys and organs, and oftentimes we'll talk about things in a very earthy way. But he's saying that transcending the phenomenal world, like that goal of reaching bliss, is the life vein of wise people and sages, and the kidney and liver of humans and heavenly beings. It isn't quite it. It isn't the nostrils of Shakyamuni, and it isn't the eyeballs of Mahakashyapa. The nostrils being kind of in Buddhism, the original face. Eyeballs being understanding. So, here, Dogen is saying that bliss, nirvana, enlightenment, is what all sages. It's incredibly important. It's the lifeblood of sages, but it isn't it. It isn't it. It doesn't quite get it. He continues, with his whisk, Dogen drew a circle and said, look. It's kind of classic. Whisk in Buddhism for Zen teachers is the mark or the one of the accoutrements of a master or of a teacher. So he says, do you people want to understand the occasion of this auspicious morning? Makes a circle and says, look. Look. It's right here. It's right now. It's nowhere else. It's nowhere else. Your breath yin and yang. It's right here, in and out. It's nowhere else. After a pause, Dogen said, "Although the plum blossoms are bright amid the fallen snow, inquire further about the first arrival of yang with the solstice." Although the plum blossoms are bright amid the fallen snow, inquire further about the first arrival of yang with the winter solstice. Again, plum blossoms are an image, the natural images just abound in Zen. And plum blossoms, we have, and I don't know if it's the same species, Prunus, but we have a species. We call it plum. Sometimes it's wild plum, choke cherries, that whole genus of plants, many of which blossom before the leaves come out. They're like the first blossoms in springtime, besides the ephemeral flowers in the ground, but it's in terms of wooded plants, plums will blossom while everything is still bare. Sometimes they'll blossom when their leaves are half open, and it's before any other wooded plants are have leaves on them. So these flowers appear; they're the first flowers in the woods, and oftentimes they appear when snow is still on the ground, or they appear and it snows. And it is an image for enlightenment in Zen. So he says, although the plum blossoms are bright amid the fallen snow, inquire further about the first arrival of yang with the solstice. So through all this, this winter solstice Dharma Hall discourse, Dogen is playing, as he so often does, with practice and realization. They are not different. Don't go looking for nirvana any place other than right there, right now, with your butt on the cushion. That's nirvana. I mean, this floor is in Dogen's world, from Dogen's viewpoint, this floor is expounding the Dharma as we sit on it. And it's not being expounded in any other moment, in any other place, or it is being expounded in every other moment, in every other place. So, in this very auspicious day, yesterday, when the days began to get longer, and the yang began to rise, and yin had reached its fullness, it's still occurring every moment, right here, with every breath, every atom, is where both nirvana and practice is. And in our tradition, the practice is everything. It's day-to-day stuff that you do, the interactions you have, but there's also a very high emphasis placed on sitting meditation, finding a time every day to retire and settle into that quietness where you can actually perhaps sometimes get a glimpse of that manifestation of form and emptiness as the same. Before I, I've taken enough time. I do want to do this one. One of these images that Dogen used, or that Hongzhi used. He talked about. Um, take the skulls of the Buddhas of the three times and thread them onto a single rosary. And that's an image, a Buddhist image, a rosary used often to count vows. In his next, the next winter Dharma Hall discourse that Dogen does, he again in the images stringing the Buddha's images together through their nose. Remember the original face? So this is a few years later. He's already read or recited Hongzhe's winter solstice Dharma Hall discourse. So now he's commenting on it. But I just wanted to. This is his comment on the rosary. The noses of the Buddhas of past, present, and future are pierced in one long line together with large and small rocks, long and short boards, the face, the clear face of heaven, and the peaceful face of earth, and all receive support. The noses of the Buddhas, past, present, and future, are pierced in one long line together with large and small rocks, long and short boards, the clear face of heaven, and the peaceful face of earth, and all receive support. The image there being of that rosary of Buddha, Buddha skulls, it's pierced through with everything, pierced through with all of existence. That there's no difference between the Buddhas and the rocks and the trees and the boards and the electric light bulbs. It's all one. So I'm going to stop there and open it up to either questions or comments. Hearing none?
No, you were talking about how connected they were in the natural world. I was reminded that the bells that they used in the monastery depended on when the sun was going up or down. So at night, not only, this isn't the thing, I won't be able to get the whole thing, but the timing of the bells and the number of the bells, and you know, those big old monasteries, they have the big drum, and it's very dramatic. And the way that they do that drum also depends on that. So I was thinking that, not only are they more connected because they're out and about in the world, the natural world probably more than we are, but they have other monastic retreats.
Oh, good.
But in the very beginning, you have these two examples, and one of them was your favorite baseball hitting the bat and completely changing direction. And then you talked about the earth hitting this one point where then it's such a beautiful question, where then it comes this way and begins to point closer to the sun. But at no point does the earth change direction or have any impact or anything like that. So why are you using those two as a similar visual?
Right. The reason that you're right, and I actually thought about that, the Earth does not hit something and change direction. Although there is an element, so the reason that I used it was this element of a moment, and the idea of return. So hitting a point and then shifting direction. That's really interesting.
But, you know, spinning through a circle is a bit more sublime because in every moment you're leaving and returning at the same time. And at every point
Yeah. And you could say that you're absolutely right, David. That it is sublime in every moment. It's leaving and returning. But you can make the same thing about that baseball. I mean, the same statement about the baseball. Can you ask the question a little? I'm not sure I got the question.
Well, I was assuming the eyes and the nostrils, if I could say that, well, you receive the phenomena, the internal organs, the practices, you know, you the emptiness and so forth. But then you receive the phenomena as part of your practice. As I was expecting, you didn't take that. In fact, I was so confused. Right. I'm afraid I didn't quite receive what you were asking first. So I guess what I'm asking is if you repeat that, if you just the role of phenomenon.
Yeah, in that situation, Dogen was using nostril and eyes not as sense organs, but as metaphors for original face, the nose, and for understanding, the eyes. And so, what he was doing there is he talked about he equated how did he put it, going beyond phenomena. So going experiencing emptiness is the lifeblood of sages and Buddhas. It's their work. But then he says, he's much more dramatic than I am. But it is not the original face of Buddha, and it is not the understanding of Mahakasyapa. There's more to it than that. And then he goes into the more to it is phenomena, and so he emphasizes the practice and the manifestation of emptiness right here, right now. Whereas Hongzhe was emphasizing the emptiness part. Does that?
Yes, I understand
it
as much as well.
Who's that guy?
Hongzhe?
No.
Mahakasyapa. Mahakasyapa is the guy that when Buddha held up a flower, he smiled. And supposedly then passed on the teaching in that moment. So in our lineage, for those of you who don't know, we kind of have this Catholic kind of thing going on with lineages from, you know, right back to the Buddha himself. And so Mahakasyapa is the second in the lineage. So if we trace our lineage back, it starts with Buddha, and then actually goes back a little further than that. And then Mahakasyapa is the second. Anything else? Well, I wish. Oftentimes, actually, on a couple of these, what Dogen did is he ended with, you're ready for this big punchline that's going to, you know, bring it right back. And the punchline is, I wish you all a great year. So. Dogen would sometimes end it with that kind of statement. Yeah. You want to know the important thing? Have a great year.